Is Rick part of this?
Rick can be part of this. You want to be part of this?
Yes, of course.
Sure.
He does.
Yes.
I have no idea.
Well, it'll be about when you. This is the one about casting. I have to tell you guys. You guys were like table tapping like mad. I have never seen John table tap, and he was table tapping.
And he's table tapping with an iron.
But all three of you are sitting here going like you're playing the piano.
Is that, sorry. Yeah, I still haven't had dinner. So.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shelp.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. This is episode 21.
It can drink now.
That's right, entitled, You Can't Always Get What You Want.
Oh, that's the story of my life, honey.
There you go. And why is it titled? Oh, I should, before we start, our friend geek from South Bend, Mr. Rick Ellis, is with us again in this episode to spend some time with us and talk about this topic as well. And welcome, Rick.
Thanks for asking me.
There you go. We are talking about the problem that directors have in which they, yes, no table tapping. We had table tap. Fever the last time.
Okay, anyway, it was an experiment.
It was an experiment. There you go.
Yes, it was.
Sometimes, despite your best efforts, you may end up with, as a director, you end up with plenty of people coming out to audition for your show, and yet you do not have the mix or the skill level or just the right casting. And you've got a problem. What do we do in that case? And how do we control for that? We were talking just a little ahead of the show here and saying that, you know, one of the things to do is to essentially make sure as many people as possible with the right skill levels, et cetera, the people that you think are possibles, are going to be available for the audition. And that's, I don't think there's any secret that, you know, when we select plays for a season or are getting ready to produce a play, that we have to have a pretty good idea that the talent pool is out there that can actually handle it. And so that's, you know, I think that that's not an unusual way to do it, really, is it?
We always have to think ahead of time. And of course, that can change dramatically as the year goes on. Somebody may move, somebody may get a job somewhere that's a second shift and they're not able to do theater anymore for a while. Just selecting a season alone, we often sit as a committee and say, do we have people that can come out and do this particular role? Because if we don't, I mean, specifically, then, you know, we may want to rethink a show.
Right.
Of course, as a director, then, it's always nice when you're surprised.
You know? In the same vein, not only play selection, but directors themselves. If you submit a play you want to direct, you're not necessarily going to submit Annie unless you know that you've got somebody in the community, at least in mind,
sure,
who could do the role.
Now, different community.
And a dog.
And a dog.
And a dog.
Although we've always gotten our dogs from the pound, and they've been really good. But,
except for
I
that
agree.
One that pooped on stage right in the middle of the production,
funny.
Right?
That was during...
Yes, we had a Toto disaster.
Wizard of Oz, yeah.
Toto disaster.
Well, that happens when
but
you
that's a whole
animals.
Other story, working with yes. kids and animals. And I don't think we've touched that one yet. So
no,
maybe
no
we'll,
I don't think
that's
so.
That's a really
but,
good one.
But, no, different theaters do work differently, though. For example, I know that in South Bend, at South Bend Civic Theater, they have people submit plays. However, with our particular theater, we have a committee that reads plays and then submits and then finds directors for the plays that are placed on the season. So right. It's a little bit of a different direction to work.
But
it's the same
that,
thing.
In that vein, a director is not necessarily going to accept your offer if they can't think of somebody who could play that leading role.
Well,
I mean, that's something you have to consider
right.
as a director,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it is. We used to think, well, we really love this play. It's a great play. If we put it on the season, we don't have to worry because no doubt people will come and audition. And that just doesn't always happen. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if you're lucky, it does. But more times than not, it doesn't. And it's really a challenge sometimes. What I usually do is look at the play and look who my dream cast would be. and try and make sure that I contact all these people before auditions and just, and I do, I never say, I want you to do this part. But I say, I really would like you to come out and audition for this production because I think there's probably a part in there that you might be able to do. Now, we both know directors around here who do precast, and I don't think anything can kill your audition process worse than having people walk in and know they have no chance of getting a particular role because it's promised to somebody else.
Yeah.
No, you don't want to do that. And the thing is, but you always have to be prepared for the fact that even if your dream candidate, so to speak, comes in for, say, a leading role, that, you know, maybe some of the people that would end up being cast around him or her doesn't match up very well. So, you know, it's always that mix. And you may find that your dream candidate, you know, in any other cast would be okay, but not in this one that seems to be coalescing. So, you have that problem, too. So that's why you don't promise. No.
But it's really nice to be able to see as many as you can so that you at least have some selection. I've been some auditions where you need, like, four people for the cast and seven people audition. So then, you know, you're really lucky if you get what you want, but it doesn't always work that way.
I've been at a show where I've needed two people for the audition and only one person showed up.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's like, and what do you do? God. I mean, and that's, I think that's kind of what we're discussing.
Yeah.
I will say that I think if you're going to precast a role, I think it's okay if you make sure that people understand that that role has been precast. And for what reason possibly it's been precast, or maybe it's always
like
evident
you needed
why
a specific, person who has specific kinds of experience
exactly.
that you don't find anyplace else.
That you may just not be able to find. And so if that show, but then at least the actors come to your audition knowing that that role is not available. But I do have a problem with people precasting it, but not allowing people the knowledge that it's been precast. So that they audition thinking that they have the ability to get that role, and then they don't get it. But maybe that's another topic altogether. I mean, what we are discussing is what happens when you've got maybe enough people, but maybe the right person didn't show up in this case. And what do you do? And, I mean, I try and talk up all season long.
Right.
As the season goes on, every time I come in contact with a performer, whether it be in my theater or if I've gone to see another show somewhere else, I try to let them know that what my season is, that there may be a role for them in and that they should come to audition, and hopefully that's my easiest way of getting more people. But I mean, when you don't have enough people, what do you do? And it's a tough one.
Well, it's important also, I think, to build relationships with other arts organizations. Mm-hmm. I know that there are times when other theaters will call South Bend Civic, and we had an administrative assistant and volunteer coordinator who constantly was giving out actors emails or sending actors emails to contact this person or that person for commercial work or for other theaters. You know, people, it was just a common resource,
sure,
I think,
sure.
And it's important to develop those relationships.
Yeah, I do not think that especially community theaters should be averse to sharing the talent pool.
Right.
Really.
Right.
Because you just never know what's
well, and especially in an area
15 miles away.
Yeah, if we were in Chicago or New York or, you know, a large metropolitan area, it's probably less of a problem. But, you know, even there it may still be something of an issue. But, you know, the talent pool is more limited here than it would be in a town where there's maybe a lot of theater and a lot of actors that looking for something.
I guess the question becomes, though, if you don't get the people that you were expecting, do you hold a separate audition? I mean, is that something?
Call
back. Do like a callback or something and invite people to attend? How fair is that? I mean,
callbacks are done all the time.
Yeah.
And for people to show up that didn't originally audition, I think is fairly common.
Well, I think that I think that in one sense, it's fair if you really have a problem. If you feel that you have someone that you can, and I kind of have this rule, and John, you know what this is. This is sort of like, I'll drag one person through a show that I don't think is necessarily exactly what I need, but that I think I can work with, because it's two reasons. One, they had the guts to come out and audition, for starters, and they're there and they want a part. The second thing is that I think I take it pretty seriously that part of the role of director is to teach people how to do it. And if you can, and if you can take somebody, and I have done this with several people who had nothing, had very little skill, but had maybe a spark in there that I said, okay, we'll try it, and I've dragged them through and worked with them. I mean, I've made some mistakes occasionally on that, but not too many really. And Marcia's giggling here because Marcia's aware when it hasn't quite worked out because she sees every show, and even some of those that don't work out exactly the way you'd like them to, I feel like when all is said and done, and this is all predicated on whether they really hurt the sales of the show ultimately, but what I feel is when it all is said and done, even if it wasn't perfect, it took that person a few steps forward. Yeah, and so I really think that that's really important.
It is important.
And maybe I wouldn't put them in a particular kind of role like that again, but they'll come back and maybe do better next time.
Yeah. And I think that's great. And I do the exact same thing.
Right.
If I don't get the exact right cast, I will definitely say to myself, can I work with that person to help them become a better performer? But if you get, say you have six characters that you need and you have six, you've got eight people that auditioned, and you have to bring four of them to that point because they all are inexperienced.
That's almost impossible.
Yeah. So then what do you do? I mean, because you don't really have time. I mean, I'll tell you, there's nothing that I enjoy more than sitting down with an actor or an actress and helping them pull apart a monologue and discover what it means to grow a character and to grow a monologue and to find their character through that development. And through that discovery and through that studying process, because I think so many actors forget that there is a process to it, and that you need to start at a certain point so you can get to another point. And I love to do that, especially with new actors who have never gotten a chance to kind of experiment with monologues. But if I had to do that with four people, I don't know what I'd do. So, I mean, there is a part of me that says I'm going to have to call somebody and ask them to come to a callback, And I will admit, I've been one of those people that's been called. I distinctly remember a director one time calling me on the phone, and over the phone saying, give me your best British accent. And I said, okay. And I said something in a British accent, and she
Angus said, and Mash.
She said, it's yours now. Would you like to be in the show? And it's like, I guess so. And it was because she knew she didn't have the right person for the role and that I would probably be the right person for the role.
She'd probably seen you before, too.
But she had seen my work before.
Right. Exactly.
This was not like a cold audition on the phone.
No, and they always say your best audition is your last performance. So.
The difference is if you were asked to do a role because nobody else auditioned for it, if you just because you were better than those who auditioned. Now, that's where you have to kind of draw the line and see, is it fair to the people, as Dave said, who came out and really...
And risked.
And risked. And God, there's nothing worse than doing a cold audition. I mean, it scares the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, no matter how many shows you've done, you guys know when you get up there and everyone's looking at you, or you're in a room by yourself with the director and the stage manager, you just feel like, ugh, I can't get it out, So somebody that has gone through that process and really wants to be in it, is it better to take a chance with them or say, well, I know John's there and he is so good and I would love to have him in this, so I'm going to give him the part. Okay, that's my question.
I don't know. What do you think?
I'm not the answer.
I think even that goes back to what Dave and John were talking about in terms of, as a director, you pick your battles. And, if the battle is cast and you have nothing else to you know, you've got John doing the set, and you have nothing to worry about on any other aspect of the production, then yeah, you might want to take a chance and utilize that person. But if you have other battles to deal with,
yeah,
then you want to go with the better casting, I think, unfortunately. And no matter what, you're going to hurt somebody's feelings.
Well, yeah. And then the other thing, having been said too, is that a lot of times you get someone who comes out there and they really aren't right for anything. A lot of times they're going to be pretty happy, especially if they're inexperienced, with any kind of a role. You can give them a smaller part,
yeah,
and they're going to be happy, mm-hmm, even if they've auditioned and thought they were going to have the lead, and you say, you know, I can't do it. Now, if it's a limited number of roles, fine. But we also really, when we have to turn people down, this is kind of a different issue, is really encourage them to come back,
mm-hmm,
and also try to get them into the stage crew. Is anything to get them into the family, so to speak.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of a
separate
issue.
Part of that's because a lot of times, and it is a different discussion, but because if you're fairly young or new, I'm not going to say young in age, but just young, yeah, to the theater, a lot of times you don't have the viewing experience that other people have. And I don't know how often I encourage people, if they're first timers and they're really not right for the show, but to continue seeing work, and not just with us, you know, you need to go. You need to go to South Bend to see work. You need to go to Goshen to see work. You need to go to Chicago and see things. Because the more you see, the more it kind of soaks into your body, and you start bringing things to it. How many people that I've talked to who had never seen a play before, and it's like, and they still don't go to see plays. And what's funny about that is that I don't really see an improvement in their ability, because I don't think they really have a desire to learn. I think they think it's just an immediate thing. But that may be another topic or discussion at some other point. But I would love to work with every person that walks in the door, but sometimes you just don't get the right people.
No, and I don't think you can. I mean, like if you had three people, even two people in a cast that are, you know, the kind that you really have to take by the hand, that's often quite a load to take. I mean, sometimes two you can manage, especially if you have like an AD or someone, even someone else in the cast that can kind of help that person through, which can present a whole other set of problems at times, but that's possible. But you're right, you can't have three or four. We went through a process quite a number of years ago when they were auditioning for a show, for a Christmas show, and we were doing that little, you're familiar with it, the little production of A Christmas Carol that we have done, which, mm-hmm, where people kind of swap characters and things,
right?
And the cast, the resident director at the time, didn't get enough people, and or had people that were just, she just didn't think we're going to make it, and we gave serious consideration to not doing the show. And I thought, well, now that really isn't cool. I mean, I was on the board at the time, and I kind of insisted that no, we got to do it. You had people come out for it. Let's go. And of course, then at that point it was, well, will you be in the show? And I said, okay, because it was one of those, because okay, I'd put my foot in it, but we did, and I thought it ultimately ended up being a fairly decent show. I think you can, if you have the right director and the right attitude, even with some people, even with people that are maybe of lesser quality, you can come out with something that's going to be satisfying for an audience anyway. You know, it may not be, you know, a spectacular, but it may still be a good experience, and it may be, and it would certainly be, it's a good experience for the people on the stage too.
Yeah, then that's a whole nother topic. Do you owe it to your actors who maybe do not have experience, but they're learning, but they won't be really great? Or do you owe it to the people that are going to plunk down $15, $18, whatever it is, to see the show?
Well, that's why I have a rule.
I mean, aren't you supposed to put on the best production that is possible?
Well, and that's why I have the rule, you know. I just, you know, about one per show is about what you can handle. You know, if you think you can handle two, fine, but beyond that, you better be real careful.
Yeah.
And don't do it. But
you owe it to the quality of the production.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you really
absolutely do.
And people are paying, you know, and obviously if you want to have audiences in the future, you don't want to run that risk too often.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's imperative that the quality of the show almost always prevails in that situation.
So then the question arises, how do you get the maximum number of auditioners? I mean, you'd love to have 20, 30 people out for a straight play so that you can't at callbacks, you can mix and match and see which ones are better together. You know, how do you do that? I mean,
Facebook.
I don't think postcards. Facebook is good.
Facebook, yeah. I mean, yeah, today, but we've always had that issue. You know, you get a show that's a lesser known, especially lesser known experimental shows, people don't necessarily come out because it's not their thing.
Well, I've never quite understood that. I directed a musical a few years ago, and it was what I thought would be the musical of the season, where everybody would want to do it. All of our principal characters would want to do it because they were fun characters. There wasn't like a ton of dance, so it wasn't like you're going to have to learn all these major dances, but there was fun characters, fun music, a fun situation, and none of the people that I expected to show up for the audition showed up. And
was this Plaid?
No. But that was just another example. Actually, it was Clue. And you know, we ended up having a very inexperienced cast, including.
Yeah.
And although our audiences enjoyed it, I will say our audiences enjoyed it, but it was a real challenge to do that show. And I don't know how. And you know, and so you expect these shows to get these large groups of people to audition, and they just don't. And I've never quite understood why actors who work with you a lot don't want to take that risk on a show that's kind of unusual when we put them on the season to kind of challenge those particular performers to begin with. You know, does that make sense?
Right.
Why you would do experimental? It was kind of like an experimental situation, and you think that the actors are going to want to do experimental theater, and then you can't get them to come out.
And you would think too. You know, I think all four of us have done directing, and we all have had the experience where we tend to attract our own little kind of cadre of people who tend to audition for our shows,
yeah.
And once in a while you find out none of my regulars are here this time.
Yeah, yeah.
None of my friends came to my audition.
They don't love me anymore.
Yeah, it's always surprising to me because you know you have people that you have been very reliably there every time. Yeah. And
I have talked to a variety of actors about this, and recently, what seems to be a common response is that the time is, I mean, for society in general, time has just run away from us.
Right.
We have no time to do hardly anything anymore. Right. And everybody that has done theater, if you're a veteran, you know it's a huge commitment. You just did a podcast on commitment. And to commit yourselves to 6 weeks, 8 weeks, however many weeks of your life is going to be out the window. An actor might look at an entire season and say, okay, I would like to do this show, that show, but I want to do that show more than this show. And they'll forego a show that you think might have a bigger draw.
I think you're absolutely right.
And pick one out of the year. And that one might be the one that everybody wants to do.
Yeah.
And so nothing.
It always is.
Yeah. So you don't get out.
So don't pick any really popular shows.
No.
Your season.
Or pick all popular shows.
Yeah.
Or make them all so popular that they have to come to
Uproar. Or start telling your actors, you'll never get cast in that show.
Yeah.
You need to come to this one.
I think I have told people, because I truly believe it though also. I mean, I would tell
them.
That right. I think if I'm looking at the season and I think this show would be great for you.
Yeah, you're much better suited.
Exactly. Like this character is what you do. You know, you play evil well. Why not? Why not stick to it?
Wait a minute, did he look at me?
I've also believed it, and you've also told people, and I have too, that you say, you know, I don't think there's a part in this for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that they couldn't probably portray any of the characters, but either age or you know style or whatever or things they've done just doesn't quite match up.
Or have you ever had it bite you?
What?
Well, then you have an audition and nobody shows up, and then you say to yourself, "Why did I not tell that?" Yeah, then you have to call that person and say, "Would you like to come do the show?"
Oh,
you're
no,
not really good.
No,
for the role,
because
but
no.
I need somebody.
Yeah, you're not too great, but we'll take
no,
you.
I don't think I've I've had that happen once.
No, but. usually it's a lead pipe cinch. They couldn't be in the part anyway
because
I can't. Anyway, I don't even know what a lead pipe cinch is.
I don't either. That's very interesting.
That's an old phrase. I figured you would know what that was, Marshall.
No, thank you. Why? Because it's old?
No.
Oh, good heavens.
Let me make you feel at home. 23 Skidoo.
Oh. No. That's better. That's better.
Yeah. Anyway, well, I think that that's all the time we have today for Theater Geeks. I think that we could talk about this a lot more, even in, but maybe in a part two, another episode sometimes. I'd like to thank Rick Ellis for being with us in the last two episodes, and we appreciate it. Come back anytime
you
want to, Rick.
Please do. Bring your friends.
Remember to stop by www.theatergeeks.com/store to see all of the wonderful things we have in the Theater Geek store.
What kind of things are in there, Dave?
There's geek gear in the store. There's hats, underwear. No underwear.
T-shirts,
coffee mugs, sweatshirts, hats.
You said hats.
Did I say hats again? Okay, that's enough.
Let me just go and look.
Dinner plates.
There's
no dinner plates there. Anyway,
a whole new set.
Doggy sweaters or something there. I don't know what we got in there. Anyway, we've got a lot of wonderful stuff with the Theater Geeks logo on
it. Any money off of it either.
Email us, right, Dave?
Email us with questions and comments and contributions to the show. That would be wonderful. Also, if you subscribe on iTunes to Theater Geeks and you know who you are, please give us 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5, and preferably 5-star rating for the Theater Geeks podcast. And if you even have a time, write a little bit of a review for us. That helps bring our numbers up on iTunes and brings in more listeners. Anyway, that's all we have. That's all I have to say now. So I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaub.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
No dinner plates. There weren't any dinner.
There was no underwear either.
There are no underwear.
We could have underwear. We could have thongs.
Oh,
thongs.
My God.
There's like a...
Has anybody bought anything from that store?
No.
Dave did. He bought
an ad.
Oh, that's right.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.